The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tastytrade is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
You're listening to The Exchange. Here's today's show.
Thank you, Scott. We will see you on the bell indeed. Meantime, welcome to The Exchange. I'm Tyler Matheson in for Kelly Evans. Here's what's ahead this hour. You got your GDP, you got your PCE, you got big tech earnings. It could be a market moving week big time. Now, if there's a pullback, our market guest says buy, and he'll tell us why and where he's looking for opportunity. Plus, speaking of pullbacks, some of the semi-names are in a bear market. But our analyst sees strength ahead and soon. He tells us when, why, and which names he sees best positioned across the chips universe right now. And on this Earth Day, a special three buys and a maybe ESG edition. The acronym may be divisive, but the returns our guest sees for these names may make you a buyer. But we begin with today's markets and Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Tyler. We are essentially at the highs for the day. Been a good day. 2-1 advancing to declining stocks. Yields are stable. That's a big help to the markets. Let's take a look at some of the major indices. S&P 500, fairly narrow trading range, about 30 points on the day, just at the highs of the day. Dow Industrials also fairly narrow, around the 200-point trading range. The high print was right at the open, and we had a mid-morning slump. We always do, and then we recovered. Same with the NASDAQ. Started positive, went negative, and now you see up 0.6%. I think the important movers this week to watch are the semiconductors and see if we're getting a bounce. And indeed, that's exactly what's happening. NVIDIA, remember, NVIDIA was $900 like six trading sessions ago and a horrible close on Friday. And you see the move here to the upside. Taiwan Semi was down several days in a row here after poor guidance last week. It was, what, 147 or so, and now it's 128, but recovering. Texas Instruments, Micron also on the upside. Dow leaders tend to be financials and defensive stocks. I've been commenting on the banks. They're having the biggest ones are having a really nice little run. Goldman's been strong. J.P. Morgan's been strong. Bank of America strong. Wells Fargo's at a new high. That's a noticeable trend. Defensive stocks are not leadership groups, but Procter & Gamble have been okay. They had the earnings last week. It's been up since then. Johnson & Johnson had earnings, what was it, early last week, was it? And they're trading to the upside as well. Big names. There are some big names having a terrible time that you all know and love. Tesla down again today. It's down, what, 40% this year? That is very close to a 52-week low. Let's call it just about. Apple, believe it or not, down 14% this year, is also not far from a 52-week low, 1 or 2% away. And Boeing, same thing. That's down more than 30% this year, also near a 52-week low. What I am excited about is the IPO market. We had a bunch of them last week that are holding up very well. We're going to have a big one this week. Rubrik down here at the New York Stock Exchange should be trading this Thursday. That's a big data security company. That's going to raise a lot of money, close to $700 million. And we also had an announcement just this morning about another IPO be trading next week that you all know, Viking. This is the Viking Cruise Company, of course. They're set to start trading May 1st. That's, again, NYSE IPO. This is scheduled, $44 million, 21 to 25. You do the math here, Tyler, that is close to a billion-dollar IPO at the midpoint. So we're getting several weeks in a row where we're getting $1 billion to $2 billion in IPO money raised. That's what we used to do prior to COVID. You do $1 billion a week, and you get $50, $60 billion a year. But 2022 and 2023 were awful. 2024, at least April, really looking pretty good. Tyler, back to you.
All right, Robert, thank you very much. Our next guest says the outlook for the economy and for corporate America are strong and even sees a rate cut delay as a positive because it keeps more dry powder for the future, which can lengthen the market cycle. For more, we're joined by John Porter, CIO and head of equity at Newton Investment Management. John, welcome. Good to have you with us. Among the other things, well, why don't we start with the interest rate argument here? You're putting on your positive hat and saying that if we don't get six cuts, we don't get three, we might get two, we might get one. It's all good. Why?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say it's all good, but I think it's generally pretty favorable because I think you have to look at the reasons why the rate cut's been delayed. And a lot of it's because the economy continues to be so strong. I mean, we're looking at a first quarter GDP print we'll see later this week that's probably going to approach 3%. The market's not exactly demanding rate cuts to fuel economic growth. Admittedly, inflation isn't coming in quite as fast as some market participants were expecting at the beginning of the year. But inflation does continue to improve. And I think the outlook is when, not if, that we're going to see rate cuts. And I don't mind seeing them delayed because, as you said, I think that provides fuel for later this year and into 2025 even.
Yeah, the assumption is that they're coming. How many? Well, who knows? But they're coming, and the market seems willing at least to tolerate that. Among the things you say, it says here in my notes, thoughts from John, small cap valuations seem very attractive relative to large cap, at least a 15-plus year low. It's been this way for a long time. So why would I think anything's going to change here and that small caps are going to have their day in the sun?
Well, that's the exact right question. Why should anything change? And I think until you see the fundamental backdrop change, nothing will change. Part of the reason why small caps are at such a discount relative to large caps is because the large caps have been driving the earnings narrative in the broader market, and the small caps have been lagging. Certainly the last 5 or 6 quarters, large cap stocks have outgrown small cap stocks by close to 1,000 basis points per quarter on a year-over-year basis. And as long as that continues, large cap is going to be where the money's going to flow in the market. Now, we see a broadening out of the economy, a broadening out of the market, possibly happening in the second half of the year based on current forecasts. Small cap earnings should be growing faster than large caps in the second half of 2024. And if that plays out, particularly where valuations are, we think small caps are poised for quite the catch-up rally. But we need that fundamental catalyst of earnings improvement to be the driver.
Two sectors you like right now are energy and small cap healthcare. Explain.
Yeah, in the small cap world, I just see a lot of innovation happening in small cap healthcare, particularly when I compare it to technology. Down in cap, the small cap technology companies aren't really driving the innovation. We're certainly seeing that led by the mega cap companies. On the healthcare side, though, the small cap companies are where the innovation engine really exists. And we're seeing the new products come out of the small cap healthcare companies. And you're seeing large cap healthcare companies having to dip down into small cap to make acquisitions to fuel their own growth. The other area I like is energy. Now, I've liked energy for a while. I think energy is very attractive because of the capital discipline we're seeing from companies. It's a new environment for energy companies. They're much smarter about capital allocation. They're going to dividends and share repurchases, not speculative investments in the ground. At the same time, the strong economy we're seeing is improving the supply picture, the demand picture, while supply continues to be constrained. So I think the setup for energy in 2024 is very attractive.
All right, John Porter, thank you very much. We'll have you back soon. Appreciate it. Thank you. John Porter. Cool. All right, the VanEck Semiconductor ETF hit hard by last week's sell-off. Shares are down 8% over the past 7 days now, 16% off its 52-week high. And it's not the only chip name seeing some weakness right now. NVIDIA and Micron all down over 9% since last week. But our next guest says this downturn is pretty common this time of year. And while the sector is dented, he's not deterred. For more here, we're joined by Vivek Arya, senior semiconductors analyst at BofA Securities. Vivek, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Tyler. Thank you for having me.
Why are you less worried than some about semis?
Sure. I think that volatility is par for the course for the semiconductor sector. If I look at the last decade, we have had 10 to 12 10% plus corrections in the sector, but the SOX index has compounded 26% annually, which is 2 times what the S&P 500 has done. So it is a volatile sector. It does very well in Q1 and Q4, but as we get into Q2, that's when, just before earnings, there happens to be this bout of volatility. In fact, April, the month of April, has been down 8 out of the last 10 years, but you know what? The month of May has been up the last 9 out of the 10 years. So that's the seasonal. But more importantly, when you look at the growth leader in the space, which is NVIDIA, The addressable market for them is growing. Their execution is extremely strong right now. Their pipeline is extremely strong. And most importantly, the stock's valuation at about 25 times next year's numbers, that's exactly where the stock has troughed the last three times it went through this kind of volatility. So we think that volatility is part of the course for the sector, and the growth leader is doing extremely well right now.
And so you like NVIDIA, but what about other names in the semi area that you like as well and some that you might avoid?
Sure. So I think the analysis really starts with where can we trust the spenders? So if I look across all the different end markets, the spenders that are really investing the most heavily are all in the data center, because they are in early phases of building out their large language models, of building out their cloud infrastructure. We think we are just in year two of what is probably at least a 3 to 4 year deployment cycle for them. So we like most of the names exposed to the data center. NVIDIA is our top pick, but also names such as Broadcom, such as Micron, Marvell, AMD. And I think number of these names benefit because they are all exposed to different parts of that build out. Some are doing better on the computing side. Some are doing better on the memory side. Some are doing better on the networking side. But all three of those sides have to essentially come together to help the cloud customers build out this infrastructure.
Are there winners potentially in areas that are not so directly tied to data center? We hear a lot about the data centers, but obviously that's but one area of sales opportunity for semiconductor companies. Are there other areas, other companies that could see growth?
Yeah, Tyler, and you might have heard us talk about the three C's of semis: cloud, cars, complexity. These are the three places where we think there is enduring growth in the sector. So cloud computing, we just discussed. Mm-hmm. I think the next interesting area is just the rising complexity of chip making. So names such as KLA, Applied Materials, Cadence, Synopsys, I think these names are levered to the secular growth and complexity of designing these chips, of manufacturing these high-end systems. So complexity area we like, and then cars. I know that there's a lot of concern about just the pace of EV adoption, but if you look at an average car that sells globally, it is the cost is about $35,000, and the amount of semiconductors in it is only 2%, or only $700. But look at every feature the consumer cares about, whether it's electrification, safety, security, infotainment. So we think over long periods of time, as much as it is cyclical, we do think that automotive semiconductors and names such as NXP Semiconductor, I think, are also positioned extremely well outside of the data center and cloud computing area.
Does weakness in the auto sector, for example, Tesla cutting the price, which is certainly a signal that they need to juice up their sales, does that worry you at all here?
Yeah, for sure. I do think that last year, global auto production was up 9%. You know, we saw 30%+ growth in EVs. This year, auto production will probably be flat, and the growth in EVs is probably going to be more like 15-20%. Now, as much as Tesla may not grow this year, or the growth rate is being challenged, remember that growth rate of EVs outside the U.S. is doing quite well. In China, for example, is doing very well. And that's the important thing about the semiconductor industry, that these are companies that are exposed to the global market, not just the US market. So for, let's say, a Tesla that may or may not be doing well, you have this secular adoption of semiconductors across hybrids, across traditional ICE cars, you know, because every consumer cares about safety, security, you know, infotainment. So it's not just EVs. I think outside of that, there is mm-hmm. semi-adoption. And then look at customers outside of the US as well. So it's a global industry. And then valuations also, I think, are a lot more reasonable. NXP trading at 16 times this year, 14 times next year, I think is extremely compellingly valued at this point.
Very interesting. Okay, Vivek, thank you so much. Vivek Arya. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Tyler.
Bank of America. All right, coming up, Disney could be taking a page from Netflix, and our next guest sees it leading to meaningful streaming profits. He tells us what it is and how much upside he sees ahead for Disney. Plus, three more names are getting ready to report. We've got the action, the story, and the trade on GM, Lockheed, and Philip Morris International. Before we head to the break, check out shares of Wolfspeed, surging 14% on a Reuters report that activist investor Jana Partners is urging the company to explore a potential sale and other strategic alternatives. Wolfspeed shares down 42% so far this year, but up nearly more than 10 today. The exchange returns after this.
This is The Exchange on CNBC.
I'm Cyndi Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
All right, welcome back to The Exchange, everybody. Disney's plans to crack down on password sharing is raising concerns about subscribers and revenue. But if Netflix's history is any indication, Disney will do just fine. Our next guest says the percentage of Netflix users may have dropped, but the company did add more than 8 million members in North America over the past year. Meanwhile, revenue up 17% in the first quarter, and he sees meaningful streaming profits ahead for Disney as well. Joining us now with more on the new streaming playbook is Ben Swinburne, head of U.S. media research at Morgan Stanley. Ben, welcome. The password sharing does not seem to have dented Netflix all that much, which must hearten some of the other companies that are considering doing this.
Yeah, I would say financially, Tyler, it's really worked out well. A couple years ago, Netflix wasn't growing. One of the ways they talked about accelerating growth was identifying that over 100 million homes around the world were using Netflix without paying for it effectively. And by the looks of their results for the last year, they've had a lot of success converting a lot of those users into paid subscriptions or extra members. And you read the results yourself. The best North American net adds quarter that they've had since 2015 was reported last week. So it seems like it's working really well for them.
Would you say that those great net adds that they had in the first quarter came largely from the password crackdown, or was it organic? How would you sliver that up? You get the import of my question.
Yeah, of course, and it's an important one. I mean, I think Netflix is about a year in. They literally started really implementing paid sharing about a year ago now. So we think that the impact, the benefits to net adds probably peaked a year ago, and they've been moderating since. When you look at 2023 and 2024, these are a couple years now that look like Netflix will add somewhere around 30 million members a year. That is well beyond paid sharing. Some of the content they had in the first quarter, Three Body Problem, as an example, I think really demonstrates that the core part of the product is working in the market. And one of the things we've written a lot about is just the fact that everybody in streaming is raising prices. So the market's become less competitive for Netflix as the leader, and I think that's helping them as well.
Does the fact that Netflix is sort of doing away with the subscription numbers as a featured metric, does that take some of the pressure off some of its competitors? Because they don't have to measure up to everybody benchmarks off of what Netflix was doing.
Yeah, it's not a bad point at all. I mean, I think this will happen next year, right? So probably this time next year will be the first quarter Netflix will report without giving us a specific member number. I think they'll still give us some qualitative commentary around it. But yeah, look, I think over the long term, this is a disclosure shift that you may see adopted around the industry. Streaming is maturing, particularly in the U.S. And I think what Netflix is focused on, their North Star, is revenue and profits. And frankly, that should be, and I think is, the North Star around the industry. So this could be the beginning of a shift in disclosure over time across the sector. I don't have any expectation of any changes anywhere else anytime soon, however.
we've got all of these streamers out there. We've got the Netflix, we got your Disney, we got your Warner Brothers, we got your Comcast, your Peacocks, we got every, all of this. In the end, 5 years from now, Ben, how many real winners are there likely to be? And which will they be?
Well, look, Netflix is pretty clear. I don't think we're making a lot of news here by describing them as a winner.
Got
they're
it.
Generating.
Perfect. They're like the Dodgers. They're going to be good every year.
Yeah, or they'll go with the Yankees, if you don't mind. But yes, we think Disney is, quarters away from meaningful profitability. Warner Brothers Max also kind of knocking on the door of kind of annual profitability for their business as well. But after that, the rest of the players are, still losing lots of money. So I think after we get through those, call it 2 to 3, real question marks remain.
Real question marks. Well, appreciate the clarity of the call there. Ben Swinburne, Morgan Stanley, thanks very much. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, coming up, at least two things are still getting more expensive. That is chocolate and luxury homes. But buyers of both are still paying up. We will dig into that next. Plus, from Larry Fink to Bob Iger, so-called anti-woke backlash has some of Wall Street's most recognizable names beefing up personal security. Will the responses from fringe groups and activists deter sustainable investing? We will discuss that.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis, but Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Welcome back to The Exchange, everybody. Cocoa prices keep hitting records, making it one of the hottest commodities of the year by far. For more on what's behind that price spike, let's bring in Frank Holland. What's happening in cocoa, Frank?
Well, hey there, Tyler. Good afternoon from London. Okay, so cocoa, obviously the key ingredient in chocolate, is having a somewhat of a mysterious rally. It's up 300% over the last year. Of course, that's raising the cost for major chocolate makers who also raise consumer prices. Still, U.S. chocolate demand, that increased about 9% from Q4 to Q1 with 5% increases in both Europe and Asia over that same time period. The primary reason for the price spike is a crop shortfall in West Africa, where just about 3/4 of all cocoa supply is grown over two seasons. The spring harvest, which is underway right now, is forecast to have a 10% shortfall, according to the International Cocoa Organization. I spoke with the executive director. He cited aging farmers, plant disease, and climate change as some of the factors there. However, there really isn't a clear-cut reason, and traders say that mystery is what continues to push prices higher.
The major issue today is I can't tell you exactly, I cannot put my finger on the exact reason why the crops have failed in the way that they have this season. And as I can't be categoric about the reasons that they failed, that means I can't be categoric about whether it's going to happen again or not.
And this cocoa rally's had a big impact on companies. Hershey's was downgraded ahead of upcoming earnings on concerns about margin due to rising cocoa prices. You can see other chocolate makers, their stocks are down year to date. Citi put out a note saying we're seeing the tightest cocoa market in the last 50 years. And right now I'm spoken to a commodity traders. They say there's another commodity rally brewing, pun intended, it's coffee. Coffee's up 25% over the last month. This time, it's a lot less mysterious. It's due to unseasonably dry and warm weather in Vietnam. However, really key here, Tyler, the coffee market is literally three times the size of the cocoa market. And of course, I think a lot of us would be upset if we couldn't have our coffee.
A lot of beans at stake here. So where in Africa is most of the cocoa grown, or the cocoa beans? What part is it? West Africa, Central Africa, where?
Yeah, it's West Africa, mostly concentrated in Ghana and the Ivory Coast. So again, I spoke to the International Cocoa Organization. They mentioned some of the factors. These are long, you know, standing factors. The issue with farmers being older, not enough care when it comes to the plants, or not adequate resources to care for the plants to ward off disease. So this is a problem for many years. Nobody really can pinpoint why this is leading to these shortfalls this time. But again, the questions are about the upcoming harvest in the fall. That's twice as large. It's even more profitable for these farmers. The questions are we going to see another cocoa shortfall? And if we do, will prices continue to rise and will people continue to buy? I don't know. I don't know, Tyler. Do you eat chocolate? Can you live without your chocolate?
I can live without it. My wife and her mom probably could not. They need a little hit in the afternoon, right, many days. Frank, good to see you. Frank Holland in London for us.
Good to see you, Tyler.
Frank mentioned the chocolate companies. Hershey has actually held up better than the rest of them. And that's one of the reasons why MAI Capital's Chris Grisanti, a good friend of this program, likes it. He told us a month or so ago that the company has managed to keep profits flat, even though cocoa prices have risen fourfold. He says good management execution combined with a tailwind when cocoa prices come down make this stock a buy for him. Well, it's a tale of two real estate markets. While the broader housing market is suffering from high rates and low inventory, the luxury market surging. Who? All cash buyers and more supply coming on. Robert Frank has more on that story. Cash is king, Robert.
Cash is king, Tyler, now more than ever. Real estate sales overall falling 4% nationwide in the first quarter. But luxury real estate saw the biggest increase in 3 years. That's according to Redfin. Now, this tale of two markets is being driven by rates and supply. Mortgage rates above 7% have put homes out of reach for most buyers. But as you mentioned, affluent and wealthy buyers, they get to pay all cash. About half of all luxury homes were bought with all cash in the quarter. That's the highest in at least a decade. In Manhattan, cash deals accounted for a record 68% of all sales. Now, all that cash is pushing up prices. Luxury home prices went up 9% in the quarter. That was twice as fast as the broader market. Higher prices are drawing more buyers. The number of luxury homes for sale jumped 13% in the quarter. That compares to a 3% decline for the rest of the housing market. So there's more inventory there. Now, the market with the fastest luxury price growth was Providence, Rhode Island, followed by Virginia Beach. Seattle posted the strongest sales growth for overall luxury homes. That was followed by Austin. Now, for more on luxury real estate and where the wealthy are putting their money, you can sign up for the new Inside Wealth newsletter. That's cnbc.com/insidewealth, or just use the QR code for your phone. Tyler?
Seattle doesn't surprise me. Austin doesn't surprise me. We know what's going on in those markets. But Providence, Rhode Island surprises me. Maybe they're selling them out there in Newport, and Providence is part of Newport, or Virginia Beach for that matter.
Yeah, Providence, remember, this is a percentage price increase, so it may not mean that it's a sort of hot luxury market from a sales volume point of view, but prices have gone up among that top 5% of homes by price. So that's how you define luxury in that market. So it just could be that a lot of homes are getting up to that price. And those at the top have seen, you know, you could get a small number of deals in Providence, right, that could push that higher. But again, it's interesting how dispersed. And New York, by the way, had a 10% decline in prices. So we think the usual wealth hotspots, it's not where this growth is coming. It's coming from those outer markets right now.
Very interesting. Robert Frank, thank you, sir. And let's go now to Courtney Reagan for a CNBC News update.
Hi, Tyler. Well, as Ukraine aid passes in the House and makes its way to the Senate, President Biden renewed U.S. commitment to Ukraine in a phone call today with President Vladimir Zelensky. According to the White House, Biden assured Zelensky that aid would arrive as soon as the Senate passes the National Security Supplemental Package and he signs it into law. Federal food safety officials issued a health alert for potentially contaminated ground beef. They warned this weekend products that were produced in March and shipped nationwide may be contaminated with E. coli. The items in question were produced March 22nd and have a use date of today. Check your packaging. E. coli can cause food poisoning and other gut infections. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has announced the latest group of inductees. Artists include Mary J. Blige, Cher, the Dave Matthews Band, A Tribe Called Quest, Ozzy Osbourne. Those are among the members of the class of 2024. The induction ceremony will be held on October 19th in Cleveland, Ohio. Tyler, back over to you.
My wife will be thrilled that Cher has made it. She is a big Cher
fan. It's been a long
fan.
Time.
All right. Thanks, Court.
Thanks.
Coming up, we got cars, cybersecurity, and cigarettes. We have the action and the story and the trade ahead of reports from General Motors, Lockheed Martin, Philip Morris. Earnings Exchange is next. And don't miss the 2024 CNBC Stock Draft featuring WWE superstar Charlotte Flair, NBA champion Kenny Smith, the Jet, WNBA champion Breonna Stewart, and more. That's this Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern on Power Lunch. Welcome back. Earnings season in full swing, and we are going to look at General Motors, Lockheed Martin, and Philip Morris in today's Earnings Exchange. They come out tomorrow before the bell. Here with our trade, Jeff Kilburg, KKM Financial founder and CEO and a CNBC contributor. Jeff, welcome. Good to have you with us. Let's start with General Motors. The shares are up today. Eight-day losing streak seemingly in the rearview mirror. Deutsche Bank says GM is the best-positioned automaker into earnings with strong pricing, sustained cost-cutting efforts, but Deutsche watching spending on the more speculative EV and Cruise programs. What's your view on GM here?
Well, Tyler, I agree with those analysts talking about what they're going to see from a perspective of what's the uncertainty in China? What are they doing with the slowdown in EV? But I want to be a buyer here of GM, and that's due to the fact that it's had a great year to date. It's had a great 1 year, but there's still more room to run. If you look at a three-year perspective, Tyler, it's still down about 25%. And by and large, at about a 4.7 times forward PE ratio, it's not that expensive. So I think there is opportunity here, but we really are going to be focused. I think it's critical, not just for GM, it's for Ford, it's for all the motor companies to get a better understanding how are they going to handle the slowdown in EV, and more importantly, how are they going to grapple and digest the China uncertainty. But I own Ford as well as GM, but I think GM has the opportunity to move back higher. Just remember, Ty, about 2 years ago, it was trading up over $65. And here in the mid-40s, it seems to be offering a discount.
Yeah, and it's up 46% 6 months, 18% year-to-date, as you pointed out. It has been kind of a stealthy gainer here. Let's move on to Lockheed Martin. Shares flat to start the year despite global geopolitical tensions. J.P. Morgan lists further escalation in the Middle East, delays in F-35 deliveries, and a new air defense contract with the U.S. military as some of the key factors to watch. How would you trade Lockheed into earnings? You'd kind of think that a defense company of this scale would be a market winner. So far this year, it has not been, up 1%.
That's right. And I think if you look at the environment we are geopolitically, this is a name we want to own. This is actually a name that I owned for quite some time in the Essential 40 portfolio. But if you think about it, this is a blue chip essential defensive name. It's got a yield of nearly 3%. It's got a very low risk profile. If you look at the year 2022, Ty, when you saw the NASDAQ 100, the S&P 500 moving lower, this was able to find some investors to come into the marketplace due to the fact of its risk profile with a beta of only 0.48. So I like the defense contract. It still has some room to run. It is slightly overbought, though, Ty. If you look on a relative strength index measurement, it's above 70. So it's interesting to see the all-time high at $508, not that much higher in here. But you think the world we're living in, the amount of money we're spending, not just as a government, but as a globe on defense, I think Lockheed Martin moves higher.
All right, let's move on finally to Philip Morris. The share is slightly lower so far this year, but Stiefel sees potential in Zyn, its nicotine pouch, and other smoke-free products, while also noting solid growth in its heated tobacco business. What an interesting way to put that, heated tobacco, as the company Yes. looks to reduce manufacturing costs for both. What would you do here with Philip Morris?
Well, the heated tobacco, a.k.a. smoke-free tobacco, which is actually, Ty, about one-third of revenue now for all of these tobacco companies. But I'm a little bit negative on Philip Morris due to the fact it looks like the technicals are rolling over. I know there is optimism because they will be able to sell. They bought from Altria. It was about a $3 billion price tag, the rights to start selling their heated tobacco or smoke-free tobacco. So I think that will ramp up in late 2024 and potentially 2025 when it's more rolled out domestically. But right now, if you look at this stock for 3 years, it's flat and it's gone nowhere. So this is not where I want to put my money. I can't come up with a pun right now to really give you something, a zinger for Philip Morris, but I'm taking this and putting it on the ashtray. No, all thank right. you.
Thanks a lot, Jeff Kilburg, KKM Financial. We appreciate it.
See all you, right.
pal. You bet it. You bet. Coming up, stocks rallying. The Dow now up more than 300 points, up 323 at the high. There you see it higher by 317. S&P and NASDAQ also near highs as you look down at the ticker there. But it's been a rough month for tech. Recent history may not repeat itself, with four of the Magnificent Seven reporting this week. We will look at how big tech has matured since the 2022 sell-off and what that could mean for shareholders like you. Next. It's been a bit of a tough month for the mega caps, four of the biggest tech stocks in the red for April. But Meta, Alphabet, Microsoft all report this week. So could it be an opportunity for a bounce back? Deirdre Bosa takes a look for today's tech check. Hi, Dee.
Hey, Tyler. So for tech investors that are feeling nervous about the recent sell-off, free cash flow, that is a key metric to watch this earnings season. It is a signal of a company's ability to pay down debt, reinvest in the business, or return capital to shareholders. And mega caps have more of this than ever. This chart looks at free cash flow at the end of 2021 versus now for the big six. And it could potentially raise the potential of a dividend or a buyback boost that could underpin results in the coming weeks, because Wall Street loves dividends and buybacks. Typically, though, tech companies reinvest for growth. That's been changing. Meta surprised the street earlier this year by issuing its first ever dividend, leading to speculation that Google might do the same. B of A is forecasting that Apple will re-up its buyback and increase its dividend by 5%. Now, in the past, mega caps have put some of their huge cash piles to work by acquiring companies. But the current regulatory environment has been a lot tougher to get deals done. We've seen that. And that could potentially be more reason to return cash to shareholders. It's a bit counterintuitive, Tyler, because you don't think of tech as returning capital to shareholders.
Amazon, I note, has been an unlikely buyback candidate. What's changed there?
It has. It's that Jeff Bezos day one mentality, right, where you invest every penny back into the business. On top of that, Amazon hasn't been consistently profitable. It turned that way over the last few years. It is hard to imagine an Amazon under Jeff Bezos doing a capital return program. But under Andy Jassy, maybe more of a possibility. You're looking right now at those big six, and you can see that Amazon is the only name on that graphic that doesn't offer a buyback or dividend. There you go. Jassy, though, seems more responsive to Wall Street. There's, you know, he gets on the earnings call. That's something that Bezos hadn't done in many, many years. He talks a lot about efficiency. So who knows? And that free cash flow pile, bring it back there. It was negative back in 2021. Now it is positive. So who knows? It could be next.
Dee, educate me a little bit here. You know, we're, I guess, prone to say that the AI race is between two and maybe three players, Google, Alphabet, Microsoft, maybe Amazon. But I keep hearing Meta sneaking in there, that,
yes,
that they may be a real up-and-comer. Am I wrong or right about that?
You're absolutely right about it. They're taking very different strategies, right? Microsoft kind of exploded on the scene with ChatGPT, which is a closed model. You saw Gemini from Google, also a closed model. Amazon's doing like a bunch of different things that are a bit less clear to investors. But Meta came out really swinging last week by just incorporating Gen AI and its Llama large language model into its family of apps. So we're at this phase, Tyler, where last year we kind of looked at the picks and shovels of the AI race. Who's actually using it in applications? That is sort of where we are now, what we're going to be looking for in the next few weeks. And Meta kind of leapfrogged ahead by just putting it into its existing products, which has a distribution of billions of users, right? And it has been developing its own large language model, which is open. So it kind of means that it crowdsources from a bunch of different developers. So very different strategy, but absolutely Meta is a contender.
Interesting stuff. Deirdre Bosa, thanks very much. And
thanks,
coming
Ty.
Up, these shares down about 2% year to date, but could its recycling efforts turn things around? That name and three other environmentally friendly stocks to buy on this Earth Day. That's next. Welcome back to The Exchange. Once a hot buzzword on the street, ESG investing has become a target of sort of anti-woke activists who say it makes companies misuse capital, leading to lower profits. Now, the backlash has gotten so bad that some executives have had to increase their personal security details. The Financial Times reporting that BlackRock CEO Larry Fink has become a prime target, leading the company to triple his security spending last year. But in honor of Earth Day, we are going to look nonetheless at some of the names making strides in ESG today. In a special edition of Three Buys and a Bail that we're calling Three Buys and a Maybe. The Maybe is a name that's not on my next guest list of sustainable companies, but is, however, making big progress in sustainable practices. Joining us now for more is Helen Bugwa-Kahuki, Director of Research at Calvert Research and Management, a big socially responsible investment company. Helen, welcome. Good to have you with us. Let's start, why don't we, with Constellation Energy. And I guess it's a little bit surprising that your leadoff stock would be an energy company. Why?
No, thanks for having me and happy Earth Day to you. So we actually view nuclear energy as one of the most important assets for decarbonization of the power sector. So investors' perceptions on nuclear have actually changed quite significantly, especially following the IRA Act of 2022, which created new production tax credits or PTCs for existing nuclear plants. We believe that Constellation Energy has a highly strategic asset base that will get more valuable because of the growing demand from data centers, and is being driven by the current, you know, technology trends such as AI too, in particular. So data centers, in particular, data centers actually need 24/7 power. So nuclear is perfect, given that it runs all the time, say versus solar, wind, which tend to be intermittent energy sources. That means that they're not constantly available or predictable. And then lastly, to the point that you made earlier on, we just see strong capital allocation story with Constellation Energy. Many clean energy companies are trying to raise capital to grow, but Constellation is actually returning a substantial capital to shareholders in the form of dividends or stock buybacks.
What is it that has caused, I take your point that there is demand that is going to require a tremendous amount more electric power than we're generating today. But what is it that has taken a very controversial production source, nuclear, and made it one that is acceptable to socially responsible investors? What's changed?
I think it's the fact that nuclear actually is has zero emissions or close to zero emissions. And then it's also the fact that when it comes to product safety, any issues around nuclear safety tend to be exacerbated. But if you look at them actually, in some sort of analysis, you actually realize they have less upheavals or issues around product safety than even wind and solar. So I think it's the whole idea of responsible investors just taking a step back and really thinking critically about nuclear power and the pros and cons, which is something we do at Calvert, where we've been doing responsible investing for over 40 years, but really taking a more nuanced approach when we look at the sectors or trends or companies in particular.
Interesting. All right, let's move on to our second stock here, and that is Lennox International, climate control products company, up slightly so far this year. What made you lean toward this one?
The reason why we like Lennox is because it's a leader in energy efficient residential and commercial HVAC products that both lowers like energy use and carbon emissions. So climate control is actually a key pillar of global adaptation for economies and populations, as buildings account for about one third of emissions, energy emissions. So elements of the IRA actually will benefit the like of Lennox, such as the electrification of heating, such as heat pumps. So as IRA provides tax credits to at point of sale rebates, this can equal to, you know, thousands in savings around high efficiency HVAC. And then also, we also like Lennox also because it's a pioneer in HVAC equipment recycling, which is also positive for the environment.
All right, let's move on to the final buy, and that is Waters Corp. Shares down about 9% so far this year. Testing equipment for PFAS chemicals, also known as forever chemicals. They're common in consumer products, and you say that this could be a key growth driver as more municipalities and others require testing of those PFAS chemicals in every, they're in everything, including the artificial turf surfaces, in some allege.
No, absolutely agree with everything you said. And then this month alone, actually, we saw the EPA act in two ways, where it set new drinking water standards. And then we also saw it designate like two forever chemicals as hazardous substances. Then one of the other things why we like Waters Corp is that it's just not a U.S. company. It's actually based in Massachusetts, but it actually has operations globally. And we're seeing this whole PFAS issue take on a global scale, where we're seeing regulations in Europe. We're also seeing New Zealand and the likes of Australia, and also like specific like U.S. states start to set up some sort of controls around this PFAS issue. So we think that given the fact that Waters Corp has been, you know, investing heavily on R&D, on ways to test for PFAS, we actually think it's really well positioned to take advantage of this testing as this testing ramps up and you know, especially given the global footprint that it has.
And we asked you to give us a name, a top pick for a company that is not on your sustainability list, but you see making progress, and you chose the maker of Barbie, Mattel. That was our mystery chart, by the way. What potential do you see there?
I think Barbie's story kind of pivots us, it takes us away from emissions. And another environmental topic that we're very keen on is just the whole idea of plastics. So the issue with plastics is that it's not a biodegradable, or it doesn't biodegrade. And so the toy industry, though, is one of the highest like plastic intensity, you know, industries in the consumer goods specifically. And so Mattel, we like Mattel because it's a turnaround story that we like in regards to like it set up like really good targets around achieving.
Can you recycle Barbie? 100%. Can you recycle Barbie and melt her?
It actually does, actually. One of the key things about them that I thought was interesting is that they have this Mattel Take Back program.
Right.
That also includes Barbie, and you can actually you can actually send back your old Barbies back to Mattel.
Send back your old Barbies. Helen Mbugwa Kahuki, thank you very much for your time. That does it for The Exchange. Power Lunch is next. Contessa Brewer getting ready. I'll join her on the other side of the break.
You've been listening to The Exchange. Make sure you're subscribed to get each episode every day, same time, same place.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.